So this evening's puja and meditation are dedicated to the recollection or bringing to mind of the 2,000 American military people who have been killed in action in Iraq. It's a milestone of sorts, and it has been, and it's important to bring these occasions to mind. And it's especially as a group, they say, in a Buddhist monastery, who for ourselves, our own dedication to harmlessness and truth. I mean, there's a ongoing sense of dismay and sorrow at the extraordinary waste of life and the perpetration of things which are inhumane and that are based on anything but truth. And so that we live in a monastery, and there's a there's this wonderful commitment to ideals of truth and justice and peace and harmony, and one sees the world constantly returning to the things that perpetuate sort of suffering and grief and pain and death. And one looks at it, and there's both a sense of disgust and sorrow, and then a certain frustration of how why does it keep going on, why, and what can we do about it. But I think one of the things is just to really to be bringing it to mind and to not let it, just not let occasions slip by and become inured to the kind of madness, and as if it, and because it's very easy for it all to become normal, and to be very, not accepting in a sense of one agrees with it, but just sort of accepting in the sense of, well, we can't do anything about it. But I think just the the bringing to mind, and tonight there's vigils taking place all around the country, and to bring to mind and to put into the kind of collective consciousness and conscience of the nation that it really is unacceptable. And that isn't out of anger or vengefulness or spitefulness but out of real concern that it isn't good for anybody. It doesn't actually benefit humanity as a whole. There's a few people who have benefited financially quite well, but not using that as a measure, because even if people have benefited financially, there's so much money being spent there, both in terms of weapons and contracts, so-called reconstruction contracts. Nothing much is getting reconstructed, but that doesn't actually benefit people as human beings. That's from a perspective of Dhamma, when we look at benefit, one has to look at what is and the Buddha always when he talks about benefit, it's the say benefit in the present. Trying to think of the Pali word. I mean, the word is atta. There's a particular Pali word for meaning the benefit in the present moment. And then benefit into the future, meaning benefit into subsequent lives, into the next life. Samparayaka atta. What actions are committed, that they bring benefit into the next life, so that actions which are creating suffering in the present are not going to actually be bringing well-being into a future life. Things can bring more pain, more suffering into not only the sort of present existence, but into the next life. And then the benefit on a transcendent level. And of course, don't even have to talk about that. There is no sort of transcendent or liberation arising out of actions that are grounded in greed, hatred, and delusion. So these are things that we need to be thinking, in our personal practice, and then recognizing. In terms of when looking on or considering or trying to make some kind of assessment of what actions are happening within society or in the world, one has to look at what benefit comes from it. So that if we're looking at benefit in the present, then it should be something that is bringing happiness and well-being, safety, a sense of, and when we say happiness and well-being, happiness that is grounded in wholesome dhammas, grounded in sila, in virtue and truth, because that's what brings happiness and well-being that does not have. It doesn't have retribution. It doesn't have. It's not tainted by things that are going to create more complications or kind of come back and bite one. That those actions that are grounded in kusala dhammas, wholesome dhammas, action, speech, and thought that are follow the 10 courses of wholesome karma. That brings happiness and well-being in the present moment, as well as into the future. Laying a foundation for the possibility of transcendent, of the paramatta, the ultimate or an ultimate truth, an ultimate freedom from suffering. This recognition that our what we ourselves are doing, even though we live in not cloistered in the sense of completely cut off, but certainly out of the mainstream, of society, our actions have an effect, how we live has an effect, so that for us to be able to live together in a way that is creating benefit in the present for the future, for future life and on a transcendent level, is at least being able to bring those qualities into our life so that it's a seed for other people. If we ourselves, who are a religious, a spiritual community, are unable to do that, or say neglect to do that, then what hope is there for the world? And it isn't our duty to sort of say sit in judgment on the world. Our duty is to bring as much goodness or bring as much clarity and as much truth into what we do, to both for our personally to ground ourselves in those qualities which bring benefit, and then to be able to try to set an example of that this is possible. This is something that is possible for human beings. This is possible for a group of disparate individuals to live together in a way that is harmonious and brings peace, and brings benefit. I'd say and I think it's important to recollect, what is it that is necessary to establish as conditions for the being able to bring benefit, to bring true benefit. And as the chanting that we did this evening, of course, was the funeral chanting at the time of death, and part of that chanting was the chanting of the paticca samuppada, the dependent origination. And it starts with Vijjampachaya Sankara, Sankara Pachaya Vijnana. So with ignorance as condition, as the arising of formations, mental formations, with the arising of mental formations, the arising of consciousness, and of course through the whole series, through to sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair, all the various forms of dukkha. But the arising with the establishing or the functioning from a place of avijja, of ignorance, of lack of true knowledge, the only result can be suffering. And the opposite, of course, is true with the cessation of avijja, with the conscious and clear directing of attention to true knowledge, that we can break the cycle of suffering. And it's just at that point of where we establish attention. Do we draw attention, rely on avijja, of lack of true knowledge, of ignorance, or of knowledge that is tainted by greed, hatred, and delusion. And as long as we do that, and we work from that place, if that's our starting point, then we will continue to suffer ourselves and continue to contribute to the increase in experience of suffering all around us. It's just a natural cause and effect relationship. And then, of course, the opposite is what we aspire to, is to work from a place of knowledge and true knowledge. And, you know, part of it is knowledge of on a worldly level, but also knowledge in terms of the beginning point of working from a place that what we know is not tainted by greed, hatred, and delusion, by attachment and desire. You know, and some of it is sort of, you know, understanding the situation that we're, that is happening around us, and there's, you know, there's probably, and with, say, within this society, you know, there's a lot of people who don't really actually have a clear understanding of what's actually happening. Or the extent of the suffering that is being created. Because it's one thing to sort of talk about, oh, there's 2,000 people have died, but that's only kind of the tip of the iceberg, really. Because it's, you know, it's 2,000 military people who have been killed in action. Now there's about 15,000 people who have been wounded, maimed, blinded, burnt, had limbs that have been no longer functional. A lot of the, especially in a conflict, as it is happening, so much of the casualties are with explosive devices, so that a lot of people are being maimed, and the injuries are pretty horrendous because of the and people are surviving the initial kind of what they're being either shot or experienced because of just the body armor. The vital organs are okay, but then the extremities are either being, you know, blown off or maimed or whatever. So that that leaves people in a state of needing extensive medical treatment, ongoing care, and I doubt that that's being addressed properly. The amount of fear and sort of aggression that is being experienced, frustration that's being experienced throughout, you know, the hundreds of thousands of people that are there, in terms of just the American side, is causing tremendous, you know, there's this stress, traumatic stress. that most people don't have the means to deal with. It's also it doesn't sort of take into account the, say, the other coalition forces. It is about, it's actually, I mean, it's interesting, there's about, as I read, there was, it's 198 coalition forces, 300 private contractors, and 73 journalists. And it's like, journalists are fair game for it's not possible to actually report what's going on. So that there's an ongoing sort of cloud of unknowing, cloud of ignorance that is carried on. And then that's not even counting people that within the country that are being killed, maimed. So there's this tremendous sorrow or sadness at the futility, the stupidity of it all. And you know, the basis of it is you know, how does one live in a way that is actually grounded in knowledge. And that, you know, how do you not just sort of block it out and say, well, it doesn't really mean anything to me. I'm here for my own spiritual liberation, and it doesn't, it's just the world anyway. World's always going to be like this. Or any number of excuses that are conjured up throughout the country. Because as long as there is a willingness to not know and not put forth the effort to function from a place of knowing clearly, you know, whether that knowing is sort of on a worldly level or on a transcendent level, then the world continues in its same old way. So that in the chant that we did of the Metta Sutta, which again is also a part of the traditional funeral chants, and this sending forth of loving kindness, because it's a very natural tendency for us as human beings to in the face of death, separation, loss, suffering, for the heart to shut down, or to just to respond with a kind of a superficial mouthing of kind of so-called truths or platitudes. But you know, the necessity of turning attention to loving kindness in a way that is really opening the heart to the reality of the situation with kindness. To be willing to bring attention to the, say, causes and conditions that the Buddha points to as conducive to freedom. And then how to actually do that. I mean, this, in the, as we're chanting, I was struck by the parts of the phrase, let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. And that quality of cherishing all living beings with kindness, with loving kindness, with it has its foundation in that willingness, directing attention to truth, not deceiving, not looking, you know, being very, very truthful. And I mean, it's interesting, it comes to mind the circumstance with Master Hua and George Bush Sr. when he was running for re-election. George Bush Sr. had a connection with China. He was ambassador to China at one point, so that he had a connection or a karmic connection with China, and he had met Master Hua on a couple of occasions, and particularly at one occasion when he was running for re-election, he actually asked Master Hua if he would be re-elected, and Master Hua said, "You'll be re-elected if you can do two things." And to forego your salary and no lying. Says, of course, he didn't get re-elected. But that the power of not deceiving, and not coming, you know, from really coming from a place of truth, is has extraordinary effects. So that for ourselves, you know, how do we live in a way that let none deceive another? You know, beginning with that place of knowledge, you know, just that basic non-deception. Because I mean, we deceive ourselves. All, I mean, it's not even talking about lying, and deceptive or duplicitous sort of speech or shady sort of speech or actions that are with others, but you know, we do it to ourselves all the time. We deceive ourselves. So that commitment to knowledge, in a sense of true knowledge that is not warped or twisted or influenced by greed, hatred, and delusion. That's the way to be truly kind to oneself and kind to others, to bring this quality of loving kindness into the world. That fundamental commitment to knowing clearly, and to put forth the effort. And I think that when one establishes that basic sort of non-deception as and has that commitment to it, then it's hard to let none deceive another, because or despise any being in any state. I mean that because when we come from that place of truth, or we recognize that tendency to deception, because that's what lays the foundation for us to make judgments, despise others, hold oneself up or put others down, look on people as other, as if they don't count. Some group of people who are somehow, they don't count. They don't, and that's how we can either justify or acquiesce to the perpetuation of violence or some kind of taking advantage of others, because we don't see them as the same as ourselves. I'm not saying it's a fundamental deception, or even just all beings, not even human beings, but all beings. Now, how different are they? Well, not very. That ability to harm or to be unkind is because we see somebody as other, as something that is not really the same as us. And we do that with just our within our own community, within our either group of that we're living with, or our friends or relatives, whatever. We get angry or upset and push people away or treat them unkindly, because all of a sudden they're not the same as us. They're not worthy of our kindness, not worthy of our attention, not worthy of our solicitude. And that's a fundamental delusion, because what we do to others comes back to us. It's just natural law. That's the law of karma. So that deceiving of ourselves and deceiving, working from a place of deception, we're perpetuating suffering. So that the Buddha's teaching on dependent origination is just so important, to recognize this simplicity and radical nature. And sometimes it can be, people tend to take dependent origination and philosophize about it or analyze it into sort of excruciating detail and make it into something very abstract, But, you know, to really recognize that as soon as we function from a place of ignorance or lack of true knowledge, that we're creating suffering for ourselves or suffering for others, to really see that. And it gives us the ability or willingness or motivation to return to a place of knowledge, a place of freedom from greed, hatred, and delusion, freedom, a lack of ignorance, a sort of awareness that is grounded in truth. Because on a personal basis, of course, we can feel quite viscerally that, yeah, we don't want to suffer. But, you know, and the same sort of feeling is, you know, what, you know, as all human beings, all beings, you know, want to live in a way or experience non-suffering, freedom from suffering. That to be able to bring forth that intention and bring forth that commitment to return to a place of knowledge, and to be willing to recognize the suffering when it is there, or when we are acting from a place of ignorance, and what that feels like. And so that allowing that quality of love and kindness to encompass our experience, so that motivates directing attention to the wholesome, to the skillful, to that which is a benefit. I finally remembered the benefit in the present moment. Titta dhammata. They say the benefit in the titta dhamma. It's interesting because titta is like titta dhamma. Is that which one is standing upon? So that the present, what one is, what one's grounded on right now, so the here and now. So that bringing benefit into the here and now, as we do that, and keeping an eye, recognizing that what we ground ourselves in the here and now has implications into the future, and whether it's into the future in this life or into the future into subsequent lives, you know, this has implications. It has results. And bringing a mind back to those wholesome qualities that support and provide the ground for the heart that is clear and is. And I think of the second chant that we did, that those the suffusion of divine abidings, and as we cultivate that which is wholesome and skillful, and that which is grounded in divine abidings, the quality of heart that is. Generated and relied upon, is that, as I said, that quality, abundant, exalted, immeasurable. And to keep directing attention to those wholesome dhammas that allow that sense of abundance and exalted, immeasurable, not encased, not cramped, not constricted, not limited by our deceptive minds and our habitual tendencies, and the society, the world around us, not being hemmed in by that or blindly following that, but returning to those qualities which really do bring an end to suffering. So this is something that we can be doing, we need to do, and we have the opportunity to do. And that's the purpose of a monastery, of a monastic community, of a Buddha Parisa, the followers of the Buddha, whether they're monastic or lay people. Let's say we have the good fortune of being able to have these teachings and to bring them into our daily life so that it's for our own benefit and the benefit of others. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.